My name's David Shaler. I'm the former MI5 officer who blew the whistle on the intelligence services 8 years ago. I left MI5 because I'd been briefed on a plot in which MI6, our foreign intelligence service, without the permission of the government, gave money to associates of Osama bin Laden in Libya to try and assassinate Colonel Gaddafi. That operation failed and killed innocent people. I joined the intelligence services to stop terrorism, not become party to these kind of plots. At the time, I thought this was a piece of enormous incompetence on the part of MI6, many of whose officers were actually playing the role of James Bond. They really did think they had a license to kill, when in fact, they only had a license to kill when they had the permission of the Foreign Office for the illegal acts they carry out abroad. But in the light of recent events, like 9/11, the invasion of Afghanistan, the invasion of Iraq, I believe this was an example of what we refer to as false flag terrorism, where terrorist acts are carried out, but they are either funded or encouraged by the Western intelligence agencies, but of course in public are blamed on organisations like Al-Qaeda. Like many other people, I saw the events of the 11th of September 2001 on television, and I was as shocked and appalled as anybody else. I was, as a former counter-terrorist officer, enormously concerned by the fact that the FBI and the CIA appeared to have absolutely no record of Islamic terrorists running around America and coordinating an operation of 19 hijackers taking off on different planes from different cities. That level of organisation, of course, requires many, many people who have to communicate with each other over long distances, i.e. using technical communications. So like many others, I thought this was incompetence upon the part of the American intelligence services and the American government. But in a sense, that is what the authorities want you to think. If we think they're incompetent, we feel slightly superior. And that also stops us from taking things a stage further, that this wasn't in fact incompetence, but was actively helped by certain elements of the American government and the intelligence services. I think we have to be careful here about what we're saying. I'm not implying that George Bush ordered 9/11, but what I am saying is that the available evidence indicates that people in key positions in the FBI, the State Department, the CIA, and so on, were not loyal to the Constitution, that they saw an opportunity in plans laid down by genuine Islamic terrorists to carry out an operation that would shock the world and would therefore justify US adventurism in the Middle East, particularly in Afghanistan and Iraq. The 9/11 Truth Movement takes the broad position that there are simply unanswered questions about 9/11. And I think anybody who looks at the evidence cannot fail to agree with that position. Throughout history, there have been inquiries which have not got to the truth and have been superseded and proved that there were conspiracies. So in this particular instance, the first position of the 9/11 movement is that we want an inquiry into the events of that day. Now some people, of course, want to go further than that. Some people believe that simply, as I was saying earlier on, the American government let it happen. It's been known as the LIHOP position. Now I believe that this is a nonsense. But if you have advanced intelligence that terrorists are, for example, going to crash planes into buildings, you cannot let them carry out those operations for your ends, because they may not carry out that operation. They may put those planes down into, for example, a nuclear plant, as exists outside New York, and cause havoc on a scale you could not possibly have envisaged beforehand. So if you are going to let Islamic terrorists run like that, and you are going to help them, you have to have that operation under some kind of control. And the only way you can have that kind of control is by elements of the American government conspiring with them. And this is what we call in 9/11 the MIHOP position. They made it happen on purpose. There are a number of smoking guns. I'm always very suspicious, for example, when procedure is not followed. And there is a legal requirement in the events of a terrorist attack for that particular site to be forensicated, for there to be an investigation into the air crash itself, as happened, for example, in the case of Lockerbie. And yet neither of those things happened. The steel from the Twin Towers was shipped off to China and melted down before it could be properly forensicated. Similarly, there was no air crash investigation to establish whether the planes that we saw going into the Twin Towers were in fact Flight 11 and Flight 175, as alleged. Without that forensic investigation, without the forensication of the steel, for example, it's impossible for either side to come to any definitive conclusions about 9/11. But we have to ask ourselves is why would the American authorities want to cover up the evidence, not investigate the evidence properly? That to me is a clear indication that they have something to hide. But if we look at the actual collapse of the Twin Towers on that day, and again I urge people to simply look at the film with their own eyes, we can see that the conversion of reinforced concrete into dust which is blown out of the towers is clearly not consistent with the amount of energy that was in kerosene burning airline fuel. Similarly, the official explanation that the steel melted and bowed out and therefore allowed the floors to fall on top of each other, known as the pancake theory, does not stand up to scientific scrutiny. Steel melts at 2,800 degrees Fahrenheit. Kerosene, or airline fuel, burns in ideal conditions at about 1,700 degrees Fahrenheit. Clearly those fires were never hot enough to melt the steel structures. And the pancake effect, of course, allows for the floors to fall, but does not bring down the central columns. So if you believe this theory again, you have to account for why there are not large steel columns still sticking up in the air after the collapse of the exterior of the building. And it's the same thing when we begin to look at the Pentagon case very closely. There is no obvious evidence that a plane went into the Pentagon. Similarly, we have to ask ourselves how a civilian jet airline managed to get through the Pentagon's anti-missile defense system. In fact, I believe the only thing that could pierce that system would be a missile sending out a friendly fire signal. That is, one fired by the American military. Now, the official explanation for what happened to the plane is that on impact, it behaved like a fluid, then went up in a ball of fire and smoke, and everything was vaporized. Yes, they're expecting you to believe that a plane evaporated. Now, even if you are gullible enough to believe that, we still have to account for the hole that goes through six layers of reinforced concrete, each 1.5 feet thick, to come out of the C-ring of the Pentagon. Now, obviously, an airliner with its carbon tip, which is lightweight, is incapable of piercing reinforced concrete like that. I believe that the only thing that could have done that was a missile. But these are issues that the 9/11 Commission has not even looked at. The 9/11 Commission has believed the FBI's claim that they know exactly who the 19 hijackers are, even though many people of the same name have come forward and given interviews to say that they are still alive. Now obviously we don't know who's telling the truth in this, but the only way we can get to the bottom of that is by having a public inquiry which can subpoena witnesses and cross-examine them under oath. The 9/11 Commission did not do that in the case of the evidence collected against the 19 hijackers. The 9/11 Commission, in fact, does not even mention Building 7 of the World Trade Center. And many people, of course, coming to this the first time, will not be aware that after the Twin Towers fell, that day, Building 7 of the World Trade Center also collapsed, making it the only steel frame building in history to collapse under fire without being hit by an aeroplane. An academic, a physicist at Brigham Young University in Utah, a Professor Steve Jones, published a paper. As a physicist, of course, he'd be an expert in the falling of buildings. And he came to the conclusion that on the available evidence, the most likely cause of the collapse of the Twin Towers and Building 7 was controlled demolition. As part of his paper, he asked a question that no one had previously been capable of answering. And that was how there were red hot spots on images taken from a thermal satellite 5 days after the 11th of September 2001 on Ground Zero. Now clearly, that heat could not come from burning airline fuel, which we saw burnt off immediately. However, the explanation provided by Professor Steve Jones is that the explosive thermite, which is used to vaporize the joints of steel structures, creates a byproduct, of molten iron. Now clearly, to bring down those towers within 10 seconds, as we know, they did come down. There'd have to be many, many explosives in the building. And of course, that explosive energy becomes turned into molten iron. And it's clearly that which is glowing at ground zero when these thermal satellite images are taken 5 days later. Shortly after 9/11, we will recall that Senator Tom Daschle, the majority leader in the Senate, a Democrat, received anthrax through the post. We recall that people died, particularly postmen, who'd handled letters in which anthrax had been contained. Now, at the time, of course, the mainstream media tried to tell us that this was some kind of Iraqi attack, that this was Iraqi anthrax being used to scare the hell out of America. However, the investigations by the FBI revealed that this was US military-grade anthrax. Now, of course, anthrax is very carefully stored. There are controls over who can get access to it and so on. It should not be too difficult for us to have identified the person who took that US military-grade anthrax. However, there have been no prosecutions. But in many ways, that is not important. What this establishes, beyond any reasonable doubt, is that elements of the US military were clearly trying to scare American citizens out of their lives. As if, in fact, 9/11 had not done that sufficiently. They needed a real attack that could happen to anybody across the US, not just those living in big cities. Anybody checking their mail in the morning might be picking up an envelope full of anthrax. And I would challenge our critics to tell us how that can be explained away innocently. Now, all of this, of course, raises enormous issues, because 9/11 has changed the world we live in. Historically, it must be the biggest event for 50 years. And obviously, if we ask the question, cui bono, who benefits from this, it becomes clear who would have the motive to carry out such an attack upon America. And in fact, these people have made no secret of their intentions. The project for the new American century, the neocons, in September 2000 produced a document called Rebuilding America's Defenses, in which they recognised that to fulfil America's voracious appetite for fuel, they would need to control a gas pipeline across Afghanistan, that they would need to control the Iraqi oil supply. But these people were wise enough to realise that the good people of democracies did not easily accept wars. What they recognised that they needed was a cataclysmic and catalysing event which would get the American people on their side, like a new Pearl Harbor. This document, as I say, was written a year before 9/11, but it advocates the invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq. And we contend that 9/11 was the new Pearl Harbor, used to inflame American public opinion, used to justify invasions that would not otherwise be justifiable. But at the same time, of course, it's not just the events in the Middle East that have been affected by 9/11. It's also the events at home in the US and in the UK. We've seen a whole spate of legislation, the US Patriot Act, the Anti-Terrorism Acts in the UK, all of which have not just simply reduced civil liberties, but have hit at the very heart of the kind of liberties we take for granted in a democratic society. We have seen people being imprisoned without trial. We have seen Britain being used as a stopping off point to take so-called terrorist suspects away for extraordinary rendition, or to use a more plain term, torture. So it's absolutely vital that we campaign to demonstrate to the people that 9/11 was an inside job. Because, as I say, everything that's happening at the moment is as a result of 9/11. So if we can prove in as many people's minds as possible that this was in fact concocted by traitors within the American government, the whole reason for those assaults on our liberties and our democracy are all proved to be false. Some people say that 9/11 is in the past, but the results of 9/11 live with us every day. We only have to look at the media coverage of what is going on in Iran at the moment to see that there is no lack of will upon the part of elements of the US government to want to invade yet another country in the Middle East, despite the disasters in Afghanistan and Iraq. And this is why 9/11 is still vitally important, because public opinion is clearly against any kind of military action against Iran, particularly in the UK. However, I believe that they will try and use the same tactics they used prior to the invasion of Iraq, a false flag operation, to try and implicate Iran. And given the scale of what they want to do in that country, we have to prepare ourselves for the possibility of some kind of dirty bomb operation carried out by elements of the US intelligence services, but of course blamed on the Iranians. And there are interesting parallels with the run-up to the war in Iraq. As soon as the euro became available as a currency, Saddam switched his oil reserves from dollars to euros. When he first did this, the euro was worth 0.8 of the dollar. Of course, it looked like Saddam was going to wreck his own economy. But the euro, of course, grew in strength, and other countries began to think about doing something similar, switching their oil reserves from dollars to euros. It was, of course, at this point, in 2001, that we began to see constant US-UK bombing of the so-called no-fly zones in Iraq. That, of course, was quickly followed by the land invasion of Iraq in 2003. At the moment, the Iranians are planning to open an oil bourse, an oil stock exchange, on the 21st of March 2006. And that will sell oil in euros, not dollars. This confers an enormous economic advantage to the euro. People who own the American debt in dollars will quickly want to sell those dollars if they start going down. And this, of course, could lead to hyperinflation and an economic collapse in the US. Those in charge simply cannot allow that to happen. So I believe that they will be tempted to try and let off a bomb and blame it on the Iranians to try and justify an invasion of Iran where they can gain control of the Iranian oil supply. The seriousness of 9/11 is the fact that 9/11 is not an isolated incident. It is not one example of false flag terrorism. It is, when we look at the evidence, the continuation of other acts carried out by Western intelligence services and blamed on insurgents and so on to try and undermine their support and to justify military action against them. False flag terrorism is flourishing within the UK and the US in particular. In order to make us scared and therefore grateful for these so-called added protections to our security that result from legislation passed. But of course, that is not the case. This legislation does nothing to stop terrorism. The invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq have simply acted as a recruiting sergeant for Al-Qaeda. It is therefore absolutely vital that we expose the lie of 9/11. And the time to do something is not in 5 years' time. The time to do something is now. Because if we don't act now, the very avenues of protest, the very right to protest, the right to free speech, will be taken away from us. So there will be no conditions in which we can protest. And don't even think this is simply an issue that you can ignore and live with yourself. Because it's not just affecting us, it's going to affect our children.